Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. We are going to be talking today about loss and resilience and life transitions, because living entails experiencing the pain of loss, of course, sometimes illness or other setbacks. That can happen, of course, both to ourselves and to those that we care about. But continuing to live also means finding ways to go on. I have once again on the program, my guest is Dr. Lori Buckley, my friend, my colleague. Dr. Lori was last on this program, let's see, September 13th. By the way, she has a book that we've discussed before on this program called 21 Decisions for Great Sex and a Happy Relationship. It is a great book. We're going to talk about that in the future, but not so much today. Welcome to the program, Dr. Lori Buckley.
Hey, Diana. How you doing? So good to be here.
Thank you. It's so good to have you back. And we spoke off the air, and we like to catch up with each other because we're friends as well as colleagues. Dr. Lori Buckley and I co-narrated Great Sex for a Lifetime, which was a two-volume DVD really targeted at baby boomers. So we were the narrators, yes. And that was so, you know, that was 10 years ago, I guess, maybe a little more than
wow.
That.
Yeah. It might be, and still relevant and important information, and always good to work with you on anything, including this.
Yeah,
and,
thank you.
You know, I love the way you introduced the show. We talked about loss a lot the last time I was on your show, and I really want to talk today, and I think you are in agreement with me, not
yes.
So much about the loss, but, you know, the sort of what happens from that, you know, the transformation and the meaning and the wonderful, we'll say, possibilities that can occur, you know, in these difficult life transitions, which, like you said, it's loss, it could be death, but we have life transitions and loss, all of us, all throughout our lives, whether it's, you know, losing our childhood or our...
Mm-hmm.
You know, our belief system maybe gets challenged. And, you know, these are all losses and transitions which can lead to positive transformation. So that's why I'm so happy to be here and talking about these important things with you today.
Yeah, and in a lot of ways, our discussion today is a continuation of what we discussed on September the 13th last fall. And just, I think we should let the listeners know that your beloved partner died a year ago, March, in a traffic accident in Thailand. And we talked about that last fall. And then I lost my husband, actually, my goodness, April 25th is the day of his death. So I'm having an anniversary of sorts. And it's interesting how anniversaries bring up the loss. Now, my loss was quite a few years ago, but it's still.
Yeah.
And I think about him often. I mean, grief never ends. It's just that we can move on better, and I think it's important to move on while still maintaining the memories and the lessons learned from our loved one's life.
Exactly. And the words move on are powerful, as opposed to just get over it, time will heal, power through, it, you know, the move on, the move through it, and that's what we're talking about, to be able to get to a different place and, you know, have some growth and, again, that positive transformation. How can it transform our lives? And look, at that's why I'm talking about this. And when I talked about this on your show last September, it was the first time I'd ever talked about Alan's death in a public venue. And that was a difficult thing for me to do. But the reason why I did it then, but also really important, and I'm going to say healing. And the reason I did it then, the reason I'm doing it now, is because I needed to, for my, we'll say survival, honestly, it's really more about survival. But now when I can get past that and understand, it's also about the meaning for me around his death and how I needed to move through this in a way that not only I could survive, but really have a positive impact on other people's lives. And that right now is the thing I am so focused on, because, again, we don't get through this life without, we'll just say, tragedy and pain and loss. And it's part of life. And when we can understand it, accept it, find meaning in it, and bounce back from it, and, again, transform through these transitions in a positive way, it's life-changing, not just for us, but all of the people around us. So that's why this is important, and I'm so appreciative that I'm able to talk about it with you on your show.
Well, thank you, and I'm so appreciative to talk about it with you as well. And through Progressive Radio Network, we have a really huge platform, international, too, where people can hear us. I've heard about a metaphor for life after loss, and I think it's both powerful and apt, and it is this. You think of it as a scattered jigsaw puzzle, where the pieces of one's former life have been scattered and now must be reconfigured in a new way. And we have to do that. We have to adapt to change, and we have to maybe aspire to less rigid and more flexible thinking. You know, some people that are grieving don't feel they can, for example, give themselves permission to laugh. But go ahead, and I know you did this, and I did it. Laugh if you remember funny stories that help you connect with your loved one and the person you lost.
Yeah. So healing. Yeah.
It's so healing. Laughter is so healing, always, isn't it?
Yeah. And look at, you know, people grieve differently and go through things at the pace that they need to go through it, and laughter may not come right away.
No.
You know, and it may come one day and then be gone for a while and then come back. But
yes.
It's just to really accept really where you're at, isn't it?
Uh-huh. Accept where you're at.
Accept exactly where you're at. And what reminds me, when you talked about the jigsaw puzzle, which is such a great metaphor, as you were saying that, I was thinking about a mosaic. So a mosaic, we take broken things, you know, that were broke. They were beautiful at one time, and then they got broken, and then we create something new and beautiful from it. And that's what it is. I mean, it's just this being new, creative, transformative in a way that, again, really it makes you a stronger, better person. And you sent me something around the beginning of when I was still, this was all new to me, you know, when Alan first died, and I was in a very difficult place about your transformation and what that means to go through it. And I found that really helpful. I guess that's why I like to talk about it, because for me it was so helpful.
Well, I'm of course, you and I are both in helping professions, and when we're also friends, personal friends, and we have certain skills in our profession, nothing could be better than to help a friend. And so I'm glad it was useful for you.
Yeah, and how fortunate to have a great, dear, fabulous friend who's also a helping professional. I feel very blessed.
Thank you, Lori. Well, I feel so blessed that you're in my life, too. You talk about being in the moment and being in the present. I think that while we acknowledge the sadness of grief and the present, we can still hold on to a sense of possibility for the future. But we need to be in the moment, don't we? And
talk about that a little. It's tricky. We want to honor our feelings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unlike what I did at the beginning, which was, you know, get lost in TV and cheese, which, you know, served me well at the time. I think we all have our moments.
Our moments,
but, you know,
yes.
That's not honoring your grief, but at the same time, it's honoring what you need to do at the moment. And sometimes
exactly.
You need to be numb, and you can't feel it. So it's really honoring exactly where you are. So that is the being in the present. If you're feeling happy, honor that. If you're feeling sad, honor that. If you are incapable of allowing yourself to feel, honor that. At the same time, you don't want to get stuck there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's honoring where you are and at the same time doing what you need to do to grow and heal and transform and move through it.
And
not easy.
Yes, it's not easy. And doesn't it help to have friends and to have a support network and maybe even to do some self-help reading? You know, I just heard an interview on Stephen Colbert last night with Sheryl Sandberg.
Oh, yes. I didn't see that one, but I saw her, too. Her book just came out today, so we've read it.
Yes, Option
yet,
but... B. Option
yes.
B, Facing Adversity, Building Resilience, and Finding Joy. And here she is. She's among the most powerful women in the world, and it did not spare her. She's a Facebook chief operating officer, right? It did not.
Yeah, I think she's a multi-billionaire, if I'm.
Yes, she is.
Correct.
But
yeah.
It did not spare her from the sudden death of her husband not quite 2 years ago.
Nope.
So,
yeah. Nothing
yeah,
does.
And, but she writes about, well, I don't have the book, but I listened to the interview, and I plan to get the book. But, she kept a journal. She wrote about, or she talked about, creating new rituals, such as taking a moment at dinner each evening to express gratitude for something positive that day.
Mm-hmm.
And then she declared small wins, such as being able to work or enjoying the company of friends. And so,
and sometimes a small win could be taking a shower.
Yes, exactly,
right?
Exactly.
Yes.
Taking a shower, and she said enjoying a movie, that can be a small win, or to be able to laugh, right? Whatever it is that kind of reflects that you are moving forward.
Yes, and it's honoring where you're at again, right? So for some people, a win is, you know, making a big deal at work, closing a big deal at work. For some people, a big win is, you know, getting out of bed or taking the pajamas off. It's really where you are at the moment, honoring it, but making sure that you don't get stuck there and moving forward. And I don't know if she said this on the interview with Stephen Colbert, but I think I saw her on CBS Sunday Morning, where I saw her being interviewed, and there was something about where the title came from, Option B, where she said, and I don't remember exactly, and I'm not quoting it identically or, you know, specifically the way,
right,
verbatim the way she did, but it was something where it's like when you are faced with, we'll say, tragedy or pain, you have a choice. You could either fall into the void or you could find meaning. You could find meaning in the pain. And, you know, she was having a bad day, and I guess she was talking to her therapist or her friend, or I think a therapist/friend, kind of like you are for me. And, you know, she was saying, I don't know what I'm going to do. And he said, you know, kick option B in the ass. It just, you know, just like, that's it. Like, just kick option B in the ass. So that's the option B part, is the finding meaning, which is interesting because that's intuitively what I did at the very beginning. I knew I had to find meaning and make some sense out of this tragedy, the tragedy of the loss of such an amazing man. And I wanted to make meaning for that, for him and also for me. And for me, it was all I learned about love being with him and all I've learned about love in his death. And that's really what it's about. And I know that that is what gave me strength. And we find meaning in different ways. But I love that she actually wrote a book, which is option B, I believe, that's what that stands for.
Yes, well, I heard another interview with her, and she was saying that she was asking a friend, or maybe it was the psychologist that she co-wrote the book with, Adam Grant, I'm not sure, but she said there was a father-daughter event, or a father-son event. She has one of each, a daughter and a son. And she said, would you go to this event? Because her husband had died like 6 months before. And he said, no. He said, that's option A. That's not available. But option B is available. Oh, I guess option A was her husband, but that wasn't available because he had died. So then we slip into option B, and
yeah,
to have a substitute.
Either way, option B is the one.
we
are going to have to read the book, but it's another resource, right? And I think when we have resources, you know, again, loving resources and support networks, whether it's friends or groups or therapists or coaches or whatever that might be. I know for me, when Alan first died, I was a huge Super Soul Sunday watcher, which I still love, with Oprah Winfrey. That was my church, like Super Soul Sunday for me. And it just seemed that whoever was on and whatever they were talking about was exactly what I needed to hear in that moment. I found that incredibly healing for myself. That and Mr. Ed.
So, Mr. Ed?
You know, Mr. Ed makes me laugh every time. You cannot be depressed. I talk about this when you watch Mr. Ed. Now, that's just me. Somebody else might have their own thing. But I'm telling you, watch Mr. Ed. It's very difficult to stay in a state of sadness and depression.
So, well, did you find him
on... way.
Where did you find Mr. Ed on the television?
It's on Memorable Entertainment TV, or called MeTV, at least here in Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah, MeTV,
MeTV, you search for it on your TV and your demand, and there it is, and it's beautiful stuff, you know, when a horse is surfing or stowing away on a ship. You just, you know, in a bathroom, which we all know the size of those bathrooms. So those things, they're just so funny.
Yeah.
And again, laughter is such a healing thing. But really, it's such a subjective thing. It's finding what it is, your ritual, your support, what it is. And again, that's kind of the honoring the moment. But that second part, like, how do you find some meaning in it? And that's, you know, we talk about endings happening in many forms. You know, you have a relationship that you thought was a good one, or at least you thought it was going to last forever, and it doesn't. And that can happen for a number of reasons. And sometimes we're blindsided by that. Like that in the moment, it's like, that's a huge loss, the loss of hopes and dreams and future and everything you thought was true. And, you know, it's tough. And so how do you take that experience and transform to have it, you transform? It's not just your life changing, because your life is going to change, but how do you transform in those challenging, difficult situations, which we know that you cannot grow without challenge or courage. So how do you do that and transform who you are, become, you know, your best self, live fuller to your potential, evolve and grow, and have a different meaning in your life, something that is maybe more aligned with what it's supposed to be, perhaps. And I really believe that all of our struggles and all of our challenges and our tragedies, and again, we don't get through this life without them,
yes.
You know, can serve us in a positive way. It doesn't take away the pain. I still think of Alan every day. I miss him terribly, but I am finding great joy in and meaning in my life these days. So I'm feeling really good about that, and I do want to help others find that as well, and that's my meaning and my purpose.
And your meaning and your purpose. And, Lori, we are very fortunate women because we are in a profession where we really can help others and make a difference. And that's really something. In terms of specific, because we had talked about some specific daily actions that can be helpful. I think that facing the thing, now this is generally for people, and I say this to my clients occasionally, that facing the things that scare you, it seems to relax, in terms of brain neuroscience, relaxes the fear circuitry. And so it makes a really good first step in building resilience. It's wonderful that we have the MRIs because we've got all this neuroscience now, so we can look at the brains. And I think it's fascinating that the path from the prefrontal cortex, the seat of cognition and planning, to the amygdala, and this is, of course, the emotional part of the brain that responds to threats. So there are a couple of psychiatrists who for 20 years studied resilience, and they found that the stronger connection between the prefrontal cortex and the more emotional amygdala is the prefrontal cortex tells the emotional amygdala to quiet down. So if a person can make those neural pathways stronger, then they'll be more resilient. I mean, it's a very much of a brain thing.
Right, and it's brain rewiring, really.
Yes.
And again, it's when we're doing something that's scary, something that takes courage, something that isn't easy or automatic, this is what we're talking about, and we say, you know, difficulty, challenge, struggle, pain, those are an essential part of growth, that's why. Right, so we are now doing these things, and as we're doing things that we don't naturally or easily do, we are rewiring the brain. We're getting stronger, resilient, more resilient. It's also just even, forget about neurologically, I think psychologically, it's also showing us, hey, look at me. I mean, I was in the Army when I was much younger, obviously, a long time ago, and I remember, you know, I was a girl. I grew up in Beverly Hills. I didn't have a lot of money. It's not like I was this rich kid. But, you know, I certainly wasn't longing for anything. But I, you know, it's like life was fairly easy, although I had my struggles. But I remember when I went and joined the Army, everybody thought I was crazy. But I remember going through it, you know, boot camp and the training. It was so hard. It was the hardest thing I ever did. And I thought to myself, man, now that I did this, I can do anything, you know. I can do anything. And now I feel that way. Now it's like, man, I have survived. I hope, I can't imagine there being anything else, but I suppose there is, but at least so far in my life, the worst thing that has ever happened, the most difficult thing that has ever happened in my life, didn't know if I was going to be able to survive it, to be honest with you, didn't know if I wanted to, but now that I'm, you know, on the other side of it, I still have, you know, we never stop growing. We never stop, you know, I'm going to say having pain, experiencing pain. But I feel like, man, I now know things about myself I never knew before. Like, yes. I understand my strength and my courage, and I own it. And it only happened through this, you know, horrible, tragic event in my life.
Right.
So that's what it is. I could have gone, you know, option A and just kind of stayed in that place of, you know, I could have given up, gone into resignation. I could have given up. I could have literally given up and killed myself, which, trust me, was a thought. Not so much like I'm going to kill myself, but I don't want to live anymore, at least. I could have just, you know, survived, you know, got along as best as I could without really trying to do much more. And that would have been certainly heroic enough. But it really was the doing the things that scare you, right? Those acts of courage and bravery and striving to transition or go through these transitions and transform into a better version of myself, into a better human being, to make a bigger impact in other people's lives. And that's what anybody can do. Everybody has opportunities to do it, because we all have moments where we get to make, you know, my book is on decisions, but we have moments every day when we make different decisions or different choices.
Different choices.
Option A or B or door one or two, they make a difference in those moments. And sometimes we choose, we'll just say, the door that maybe wasn't the best door, but we learn from that. And then
we
next
learn
time
if we keep our eyes open.
Right. We have to pay attention.
And, and I'm reflecting that I was close to your age when Charlie died, and I also had so many lessons, personal and clinical lessons. For one thing, I bet you did some of this too, because you had such a positive and, you know, I saw it firsthand, you and Alan, such a positive, loving relationship. And I had just such an amazing marriage to Charlie, and I feel happy to talk about this on the anniversary of his death, that I made a decision, one of the decisions I made and one of the learning things that I went through was to help couples, as a couples therapist, be all they could be, so that they don't have regrets. You know, I did not have regrets. I think we talked about this a little bit last September.
Yes.
But I didn't have regrets about what we had not said or had not done. And lots of people in grief have a much rougher road because they do have those regrets. Oh, if only we had said, if only we had done that sort of thing.
Yes.
And I wanted to, you're mentioning the Army. I wanted to mention two things that have to do with what we're talking about that involve the Navy SEALs. And in one bit of research, brain imaging showed differences in the brains of people with anxiety or depression. And the research suggested that they had a harder time letting go of emotions and are often too engaged in emotional processes. And the Navy SEALs, on the other hand, weren't absolutely glued to the emotional experiences. And why? Because they're more resilient. It's kind of like working your biceps or your abs. Training your brain can build the strength in the right places and the right times, too. That's part of the Navy SEAL training.
So interesting. Yeah.
I thought so.
And we can learn from that, and the Army can learn from that.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, what do they do? I'm guessing there's a mindfulness in there.
I think there is. Let's talk a little bit about mindfulness, because off the air when we spoke about this show, you said daily actions that are necessary.
Yes.
Daily actions. And
recurring daily actions are so important.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we can call them rituals, which I think is what Sheryl Sandberg calls them. I like to call them rituals, too. I think they're great in relationships to keep relationships thriving. They're important in our life and in all forms. But sometimes we need to be more intentional around it because it's more of a struggle. Mindfulness practice, which is really what we've already talked about. We just didn't call it mindfulness, but what it really means is honoring exactly where you're at, honoring your thoughts, honoring your feelings, without getting stuck there. So it's non-judgmental awareness, being aware of those thoughts, being aware of those feelings, exactly where you're at, without judgment, because when we start to judge it, it hooks us in and it grows and it sort of takes over. Like, oh, I shouldn't be feeling that way. Why are you feeling? Don't feel that way. If we don't honor it, we don't allow ourselves to feel it, or we feel bad for feeling it or thinking it, it just takes control. So when we accept it, allow it without judgment, and then get back to present moment, and it could be, you know, thinking about things that we're grateful for, focusing on a thing that's beautiful. You know, I like to call that this above the line thing, above the line living, which is
nice.
Gratitude, love, curiosity, flexibility. When we're below the line, it's fear, it's pain, it's judgment.
Yes.
Now, we all go below the line. It's just to understand and to be aware, be curious. When we go below the line without judgment, and then to find ways to move up, to go to that place of gratitude and beauty and love and curiosity and compassion. So that's my definition of mindfulness.
Well, and it's a very good one. And lots of people benefit from mindfulness and meditation. And I think a fabulous book that describes Dan Harris's journey. He's one of the anchors for Good Morning America.
Mm.
And famously, he had a panic attack on the air maybe 12 years ago now. And then his parents were both type A physicians, you know, and he was just so tightly wound. And so his book, 10% Happier, published, perhaps close to 10 years ago, but it bestseller. I recommended it to clients. It's a wonderful book. The book?
I haven't read it. I'm going to have to read it. I love the title because it sounds like he was probably, by the way, below the line is definitely perfectionism.
Yes, that's right.
So 10% happier, I could see where that makes sense, as opposed to, no, I have to be happy all the
time. Right. Yeah. No, he writes with humor too, and it's just, it's a wonderful book, and lots of, he had trouble with learning meditation. It was his journey, but he had trouble learning meditation to calm himself down, but once he learned it, it transformed him, and that's what we're talking about. I wanted to also talk about how being positive can expand your awareness, you know, perhaps even begetting more positivity, more noticing, more engagement, more appreciation, and more trust. So little actions help build a reservoir of goodwill that will help keep any relationship replenished.
I agree. I think it goes back down to kind of choices, right? So your partner doesn't put the toothpaste cap on the toothpaste. You can choose to think, okay, my partner doesn't care about what I want him to do or her to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, be in that place of anger and pain and resentment. Or you can go to, you know, again, above the line, go to this other place. It's a choice in that moment of, you know what? Yeah, he's very forgetful, and I know he loves me, and he or she is forgetful. It's just kind of what we're looking at and remembering that, yeah, he left the toothpaste cap off the toothpaste, but he gave me a big, giant hug this morning and told me that he loved me. So it's what do we focus on? What do we choose to focus on? What are our thoughts? Being aware and mindful of those thoughts. And we do, as human beings, have a lot of automatic negative thoughts, referred to as ants, right, in cognitive behavioral therapy.
That's right,
we
ants.
We all have them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we have them. And
yes.
Nothing wrong with having them. It's human. It's to understand when you go there and to catch yourself so you don't get stuck there.
Right, so you don't get stuck. Too many people get just totally stuck.
They live there.
That's right. And that, of course, increases the depression and the anxiety even more.
And just so this idea of positivity, you know, somebody just think positive thoughts. Just think positive thoughts. It's not quite that simple, right? Because, it, you know, that sounds good in theory, but then, you know, you have people go, well, yeah, easy for you to say, you know, you couldn't think positive thoughts if you, you know, had the life that I live. It's like, come on, get real. Like, that's just a bunch of BS. But the reality is we can, again, allow our thoughts, even if they're not quote unquote positive, get curious about them without judgment, understand them, and then expand them to go to a different place, curiosity, compassion, because the negative thoughts are not usually reality. Sometimes the positive thoughts are not reality either, but there's somewhere that there is truth, and it's usually all of it. And just to really mindfulness, we're talking about consciousness. We're talking about awareness in our, you know, in our heart and in our body, paying attention to what's going on and making conscious choices rather than living on autopilot and constantly getting stuck in that place of fear and negativity. And it does require recurring daily actions. It does require effort and intention. And that's hard. It is definitely hard. And when we do it, we have the courage to do it, and understanding what there is at the other side, why we're doing it, that's when we transform. That's when our lives and our relationships change.
Beautifully stated, Lori. And I think some of this, besides thinking about people in your life, maybe you need to look after yourself in some of these moments where you forget about what the other person is doing badly or isn't doing, and focus on taking some positive action in your own life instead by making your life more satisfying. You take the pressure off if you're lucky enough to have your partner alive, right?
Yes.
Right.
Gratitude.
You take the pressure, gratitude, take the pressure off your relationship to be the sole source of your happiness. That's why it's important to look after yourself. Plus, taking care of what you need in your own life, then I think you can bring a more positive attitude back into the relationship. And the other person, because, you know, most of us do at least a lot of CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy. So if you're taking care of what you need in your own life, then the other person will start to treat you differently because it has that effect, doesn't it?
Yes. Can't control the other person, but you can certainly influence them. And even if you don't, mm-hmm. you are in a much better place, and that is important. We all want our partner to do things to make us happy, or we sometimes think they're doing things that are making us unhappy. But the truth is, you know, nobody can make us feel bad without our permission. It's up to us to find, you know, our happiness and our joy. And yes, it's also up to us to communicate to our partner things that are problematic or our needs or our wants, but it is still up to us.
It's still up to us. So, and that's actually why people that have done a lot of personal growth work often, since water seeks its own level, often we do better in relationships.
Absolutely. Yes. And by the way, it's actually really good news, because if our joy, happiness, well-being is dependent upon other people, we're kind of screwed. I mean, that's a bummer, isn't it? It's like, man, I don't feel good today because, you know, my friend or my partner or my boss is, you know, being a jerk. And so that's why I'm depressed and unhappy. Yeah, that's a bad deal. But when we realize, no, we are actually the source of our happiness and our joy and what happens in our life, that's empowering. Yes, it's hard, but at least we have, you know, we have some influence there. We get to decide what we think about, what we do. And that's important. I think it's, for me, it feels like really great news.
Well, know? I think it is. And it also reveals that even in very difficult circumstances, we have choices. But sometimes it requires getting your head above water, like if there's a huge loss, a death. And you getting your head above water required watching movies and eating cheese, right, for a little bit.
Yes, I ate a little too much cheese, but, you know, hey, I'm working the cheese situation out now, but
I know.
You know, again, we're human, right? And we're not going to get it right all the time. It's going to take some time.
Mm-hmm.
Time is essential. It is an essential piece to the healing and the growth, but it's not sufficient. Time by itself, just sitting around waiting for time to pass till you feel better, that's not going to be very effective. But we do need time. We can't shortcut it. Got to go through what you got to go through. And everybody goes through it differently.
The Buddhist idea is the only way out is through. So it's not a good idea, although some, as you said, everybody goes through it differently, but it's not a good idea to kind of stay a long time and just burying your head in the sand
that's the tricky part. You don't want to honor it, but you don't want to get stuck. It's tricky.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think
it was doing something every day, even if it was taking a shower or going out with a friend or reading a book or watching Super Soul. Something, if I did something that I knew it was at least something that was taking care of myself in some way, that's what I did. But again, we all need to find our own way, but it's not just sitting around getting stuck and lost in that grief, although there's some of that required.
Yes. And I'm just thinking that I had my path of grief was smoother just because I have developed resilience through the years with lots of changes and embracing change. Nothing is, except for my father's death when I was 14 when he was hit by a truck. So some of that old grief. That's a big one. And then that old grief surfaced when Charlie died, of course. But I really have developed resilience, and I've embraced change, and I've lived different places. And that really helped me with my grief. I felt that... Resilience really helped me. Yeah.
And I know I'm cutting you off, but that word you said was so big. It's worth repeating. You said, I embraced change.
Yes.
Embraced. You didn't tolerate it. You didn't endure it.
Mm-hmm.
You embraced it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty huge right there.
Yes, it is. And you learned from all of this and continue to learn. And I did, too. And I think that resilience is the coping skill people need almost more than anything else. And resilience involves keeping cool. And in really difficult times, you know, you think of a rubber band, how you stretch it and it bounces back.
I think something
connected to resilience is having a high tolerance for ambiguity. And somehow I've managed to do that too. You don't really know what's coming down the pike, but whatever it is, back to the word that you liked, and I like it too, to the best of your ability, you embrace it and then see how it feels. The high tolerance for ambiguity.
Because none of us know what's around the corner. There is no certainty, not really, especially if we're living a big, important, we'll just say big and profound life. If we're doing that, there's no certainty. There's a lot of risk. There's a lot of challenge. There's a lot of change. If people want to stay in a place of comfort and try to live under the illusion of certainty, you know, that's doable to a point. But the reality is there is really no certainty. Some things feel more certain than others. But none of us know what's going to happen the next moment. The next second, it's all constantly changing. And so that's why it's important to be in the moment. And And what you said about after Charlie's death, which is how I felt also, you know, we're both relationship therapists, and now I felt after Alan's death was, man, I don't want people to take their relationships or love for granted. Like, this is something big. When we have someone who loves us in our life, as imperfectly as it may be, and as they are, and as we are, it is an amazing, beautiful blessing. And to live in that space of gratitude and appreciation changes everything in a relationship. And I want to help people do that just like you do, because we know what it means to lose somebody when, you know, it's possible. We didn't have these regrets, but people do. When, you know, they might have had a fight that morning because they left the toothpaste, top off the toothpaste, and then their partner leaves and they never see him again. We just don't know.
We don't know. Life is so uncertain. In this regard about gratitude, one study I thought was very interesting where the test subjects were asked to write letters in which they named people and things for which they felt grateful. And one group wrote 3 times a week, and the other group just once. And after several weeks, I think this was very interesting, only the once-a-week people felt happier. So maybe it's like going to church for some people. It's helpful to take a weekly look at your life. Maybe you don't, you know, you look at it weekly. And it may be more when you're in grief, but it's important. I mean, you know, if we go back to Sheryl Sandberg, she, one of her rituals was to say at dinner what you felt grateful for today. But it's really important to, I think, keep, and then she kept a journal too. So a journal of gratitude and her feelings. And don't you find when you get clients to journal, some of them don't like to do it, so I don't assign them that, but others do, and that it can be helpful.
Yeah, it's a very individual thing. I don't journal. I don't find it to be helpful for me, but I do reflect. I don't even know if I'd call it meditate. I reflect, I think. Mm-hmm. I don't journal, but like if I'm reading a book or I'm watching something and I'm learning, you know, so maybe it's a book like Sheryl Sandberg's book or Brené Brown, or I do write down, you know, specific things that resonate with me or that are useful for a quote. I have Evernote in my phone, and I have pages and pages of quotes that if I see it in an email or online or I read it, I'll put it in my Evernote. So I have these quotes, and for me, looking at quotes is really, really helpful. So it's, again, it's funny, but for people who like to journal, and I do ask my clients, the ones that do, it's extremely powerful and beneficial for them. But again, it's finding what works for you, definitely. And
right.
As far as the gratitude, and you probably do this too or have, and a lot of my couples, that's one of the things I have them do is I have them before they go to sleep at night, especially if they're in a disconnected state, is to say 3 things that they either appreciate or are grateful for.
Yes.
About one another, what they've done or about their relationship or about this person. And it does really, over time, it's not an instant thing, but over time does start to shift what they're focusing on. Because if you have to say those 3 things, you focus on them during the day. And I always have them, when they come into the office every week, start out with successes, awarenesses, things that they're noticing, efforts that they're making. Because I want people to start to focus on those things rather than sitting down and telling me all the things that went wrong. Or they had a good week, but they don't know why. So it really does come down to awareness and intention, a lot of the things that we're saying today, doesn't it?
It absolutely does, and I do some of that with my clients too, and it makes a big difference. And I do another exercise in session, and you may do it too, where I call it sweet nothings, and it's because it doesn't cost anything to do it, but each person, they face each other knee to knee, they hold hands, they make eye contact on the couch, and they each get a minute or two to say what they appreciate about the other, what they love about the other, and their positive things. And so, some of these people have not heard positive, loving things from their partner for a very long time. So it gets them to think about it and to go back. You know, we all have to find out. I remember what you said to me years ago when we were getting together for socially, and you said, and then I incorporated it into my practice. When was, you say to your couples, okay, when was the last time you two had any fun? And they look at each other.
Yeah.
And actually, we're both sex therapists. We know that fun can increase desire. Now we're getting a little off topic, but it's important to talk about this.
But fun is important also, you know, when we're grieving and when to have fun in our life, to incorporate fun, things that are fun for us, things that we enjoy.
Yeah.
You know, for me, I love learning, so I study Italian. I take cooking classes. Now I'm studying making homemade products. But it's like these things, whatever it might be, maybe it's, you know, going to a wine tasting, and I do that too, but things that I find moments of joy and fun, they're important, and it's just real easy to forget about that. And the couples, what I love about that question is, either they do have a lot of examples of things that are fun, and they're like, oh, yeah, it reminds them that they actually do enjoy each other's company, or they recognize that they can't even remember, and it reminds them that they used to, and it's something that was important, and then they can start to figure out ways to incorporate that in their relationship. But fun is important in life, right? What's the point if we're not having fun, whether it's sex or our own life, whether we're single or in our relationships? For me, fun is big. I think it's
big.
Important.
You know, one of my favorite sayings is, if you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. You know, I'm so grateful, you know, and I think this is going to happen. My crystal ball is now open, or I'm looking at it. I think this is going to happen for you, Lori, that down the line, you'll find another love. It took me 10 years after Charlie's death to find Brian, and it's such a deeply satisfying, fun relationship. We have so much fun. And, you know, we were meant to be coupled, I think, you know.
Yes. And you didn't sit around just waiting for him to knock on the door, right?
No, I
didn't.
With
intention and courage, you know, you opened yourself up and you sought it. And I'm not there yet, but I hope that will happen. Here's the thing. I would love to find love in my life, and that's something that's important to me. And I do believe it will happen. I do. I have hope and belief, and I want it. But at the same time, if it doesn't, because look, Alan's a hard act to follow.
The same about Charlie. Yep.
Right.
Hard act to follow. So you persevere and you remain optimistic.
Yeah, but I'm not going to just find, it's not just being with a man, but if there were somebody there that was someone who I wanted to share my life with, that would be great. And if not, I'm still living my life and living
it
fully.
Yes, you are.
Yeah.
And that's what I was doing for 10 years.
Friendships are important.
Friendships are important, and learning what's important for you. For me anyway, it was reprioritizing certain things and knowing what I really wanted the next time around.
Yes. Yes, that's so important. We have to know, if we're not clear about what we want, we're probably not going to get it. We have to know what we want and why, and the rest is actually easy if we can get clarity around that. That is for sure. Yeah. But one thing I think everyone needs, I really do, and, you know, I suppose there's always exceptions, and it's a generality, but I do think that one absolute we could say is love and support and friendship.
Yeah.
You can't survive on this world alone without relationships at all. I think people think they can, but we're not going to thrive.
No,
I think it's
that's
essential.
Right. That's so very true. We've got to have the friendship and the support. And I was just in the San Francisco Bay Area this last weekend, and my mother is facing cancer, and she's next month. She's 95, so she's old, and we all have cancers in our body all the time, but usually our immune system, when we're younger, fights it off if we have a good immune system. But I loved my mother's attitude, which was, once my radiation starts, I'm going to try to beat this thing. And if I don't, I've lived a really positive life. She's had love. She's been married and widowed 3 times. She's had, yeah.
Talk about resilience.
I know. And so I feel very grateful to have a mother like I have, and to have grown up in secure attachment, thanks to my mother and my father, even though he died too young when I was 14. But still, I got launched by really... And you say at the beginning of your book, your parents were also open about sexuality and affectionate. And my parents were...
Oh, yeah, but
were.
They did not know how to be in a relationship. I did not grow up with secure attachment. I have learned and earned it.
He learned and earned it, yes, and many people do.
Yeah, but that's exactly. And it took me a while, and it really got solidified with my relationship with Alan. But you definitely are fortunate. And your mom, I mean, the fact that she's 95 and she's still fighting. I mean, there's an acceptance about what she has no control over, but she's going to fight. That's an amazing thing. I love that.
It is so amazing. And just one last little thing before we end the program. So she lives in an upscale retirement community, and there are all these really elderly people, and so many of them are touch-deprived. And Brian, my guy Brian, gave my mother a couple of back rubs while we were there, and I gave some of the old guys that I knew from previous visits a hug, and they were so glad.
You made their day.
Oh, yeah.
I can imagine.
And it was a full-body hug. Yes. They were so pleased.
I have no doubt. I love it. I think you should do more of that.
So I would like to say to any listeners, if you know any old people, be sure and hold their hands, hug them, because so many old people are touch-deprived. And then there are people that are in circumstances like Lori's. Well, you're not touch-deprived. You have friends, but maybe you're
a little
sex-deprived at this point.
Yeah.
We're going to change that for you, Lori.
Thank you.
Dear Lori, thank you so much for being on the program. I'll be back in touch with you, because I'd really like to, maybe in July or the end of June, if you're around, we'll do a part 2 of this.
That would be great. Always love talking to you and being on the show. I appreciate it, and I appreciate the listeners. Thank you so much, Diana.
Thank you, Dr. Lori, and thank you, everybody, for listening. And move on. Lean in. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.